As part of KCUR's exploration of troublingly high homicide rates in Kansas City in recent years, some of my colleagues visited a high school where students wrote about what that reality means to them.
Well, I'll tell you what it means to us.
To us, it means that 6,262 parents are grieving over the loss of their child who was killed due to gun violence.
Somewhere in the world, a young person's life has been taken.
That number, 6,262, is two times the number of children worldwide who had died as a result of gun violence in 2017, at the time when the students did their research.
The number really stuck out to me because in that number were some of my friends.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we'll be meeting two students and a teacher from Central Academy of Excellence in Kansas City, Missouri, where our reporters and a playwright worked with some creative young people to tell stories about gun violence. And first, I'd like to welcome the student we just heard from, Lashana Bussey. She's a junior. Hi, Lashana.
Hi.
So you say that in that number were some of your friends, and I know it's hard, and but can you talk to me about your personal experience with losing friends to gun violence?
With me going to different schools, I have met different people and became friends with a lot of different people. And recently, like my elementary schools and then coming into high school, two or three of my friends who were killed due to gun violence. Between 2016 and 2017.
That's so horrible to think about. I mean, how were you able to process that at the time?
I wasn't. Since I went to school with the kids, our school had crisis teams at the school at the time where we had lost one of our friends. And I was at the counselor's a lot. I was down there almost every day. If it wasn't crying, I was just talking about how I was feeling about the situation.
Good for you for going. I mean, when you got the chance to work with some journalists and a playwright who were going to come to your school and work on performing stories about these experiences, what were your first thoughts?
I was excited because it was a new opportunity for me to come out and voice how I felt about the situations going on about gun violence. But then I was also kind of like scared because I'm coming from experience of losing a friend. So it was a very emotional.
What was it that you, was there something that you hoped that other people would be able to understand if you wrote about these things and communicated them?
I just wanted them to understand the pain that they're causing parents to go through with losing their child. It's never easy losing someone, but just thinking of the parents, like just imagine yourself in the shoes of that child and your parents crying and grieving over you.
Is the experience of the parents something that you had seen close up?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell me about it?
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I know this is hard. We can come back to that. I mean, it was your experiences that you brought to it, but you also did some research. Was that an interesting thing for you to combine your personal experiences with research, like that statistic?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Oh, just when you did research to be able to do your stories and to perform, you did it based on a statistic, the number of children who had been lost to gun violence. I wonder what it was like for you to take your own personal experience and add research to it about just what other people had gone through and what the picture looked like beyond your corner of the world.
I was very shocked with the number that we found out because I thought it would be higher.
Really?
In a way, on the news, you see a lot of, gun violence related deaths. And a lot of it kind of pertains to children who were killed due to gun violence, even if it's on accident or on purpose. So it kind of shocked me that that was the number that we came up with.
What was it like for you to see what your classmates put together when they started thinking about gun violence, just the different perspectives that they brought to the subject?
I loved it. Just for them to be able to put their experience out there in their own words in the way that they could express themselves, that would inform us and let us know from their experience how it feels to lose someone due to gun violence.
Well, LaShawna, thank you. We're going to come back to you, and we'll hear from another student in a minute. But first, their teacher, Charlotte Wafer, is with us. And it's great to have you, Charlotte.
It's great to be here.
What surprised you about this experience?
One thing that really surprised me was the passion that the students presented or portrayed as they presented their piece. To me, it looked like it was definitely a culminating of event for what they had been going through the entire semester.
Can you explain a little bit how this worked? There was this like extended project over time that did culminate in a performance.
Yes, it was an extended project. We started back in August, and with the representatives of KCUR as well as the playwright Nathan Lewis Jackson, they came in and did many lessons with us throughout the semester. We met about twice a week, and we just talked about. We did writing sessions, writing lessons, and we were able to share our writings and do research. And just to have that expertise with Nathan Lewis Jackson as well as the representative of KCUR was just phenomenal. And I saw the kids' eyes just brighten up to be able to get the feedback and to really be able to have a platform for them to share their experience. I had a couple that didn't really have firsthand experience with gun violence. But the ones that did, they were really pleased that they were able to have a platform to share their thoughts in a safe environment.
Did you learn things from your students that shocked you?
Yes. I learned even from LaShawna that she's able to express herself in a time about a situation that is hard to express. She has come a long way to be able to express herself in regards to gun violence. And Logan, I've learned that how
that's
he...
That's a student we're going to be meeting shortly.
Logan is able to be expressive and also, it's almost like an actor almost, a very great at spoken word. I think he has some history with debate. So that was even great. Other students in my class was Kia. I learned that she is resilient. She is dealing with a lot of different things, but yet she looked forward to attending this class because she was able to come and express her herself in class. So that was great. I learned a lot. We're a little family now, and I have a lot of students that, even though this has come to an end, this project, they are wanting to continue on meeting and writing and expressing themselves. So we're going to continue to do that for this semester.
Did the material ever get heavy in a way that you weren't sure how to deal with?
Yes. Really on how they were going to express what they have written, because it was a medium that the children were able to choose. They could choose spoken word, poetry, video diary, a play on how they wanted to express their thoughts on gun violence. So that was kind of a struggle, but yet the playwright Nathan Lewis Jackson helped us with some lessons on how to present their story.
Yeah, I want to
keep it original.
I want to ask you about him because, you know, he is not just the writer in residence for the KC Repertory Theater. He also writes for the Netflix show Luke Cage about a black superhero whose superpower is being bulletproof. which seems very resonant with this theme. But also, I mean, was he meeting him and working with him? Did that seem to be a big deal to people?
Yes. Yes, it was a big deal. I made sure that the students know that he was coming to the sessions. And then when they got there, they looked forward to his critiques. They looked forward to his expertise because it got really energetic and intense in a positive way when he was there, because he has a passion for what he does. And just a knack of getting the students to express themselves.
Well, I'm gonna jump in and introduce our other student in the room, Logan Bates, because he just raised his hand when I said that that Nathan Lewis Jackson was a big deal, and mentioned that he is the writer on Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. Was that a big deal to you, Logan?
Yeah, because Luke Cage was one of those shows where me and my whole family, like my mom, my aunt, my sister, my dad, we would like sit down and watch that show. And it was such a good show to us, but we never really all got to watch it together. So when we did watch it together, we'd watch like 3-4 episodes at a time, and we're waiting on season 2. We've been watching all the Netflix shows about the superheroes. But yeah, that's just something we do. Like Luke Cage was the first show I watched when I got Netflix, because, you know, there's not a lot of TV shows about black superheroes, so I thought that was cool.
So when you started this project, what were you thinking you were going to get out of it, and were you surprised by what actually happened?
When I first started, I was thinking, they don't have debate here, so I can do this. This is my way to, like, make sure I'm still writing, because I've been writing for a long time. So this was my way to make sure I'm still writing, to, you know, get my writing skills back. And
when you say you've been writing for a long time, you're pretty young. I mean, how young did you start writing?
Well, I started off writing, like, argumentative pieces in, like, sixth grade for debate. Because I've been debating since sixth grade, so it's been, like, 5 years.
And so this was a chance to sort of use those skills and keep them fresh, but in a new way?
Yeah, because, like, most of my pieces are argumentative, but I do, like, narratives and things. So this was one of the things where I could start writing again, get new versions of writing.
So tell me a little bit about your personal experience with gun violence. We heard from LaShawna that it was very personal and very emotional for her. What about you?
For me, I really don't have any personal experiences to gun violence. The closest thing I had was, like, my mom had a friend and her son was shot, I think, like, 3 years ago on Halloween. And that was about the closest thing I've had to gun violence personally. But, yeah.
What was it like to learn from your fellow students what they had seen from people like LaShawna?
It was, I know that stuff has happened, and I think I kind of, like, I admire them because, you know, they haven't broke down or anything. Like, I've never experienced that, so I don't know how I would react or act or go through it. But they've been through it, and they never broke down or anything. You know, they stay strong because it's something that they've been through. I haven't been through that, so I wouldn't know. I always think that I would break down and just lose it. But seeing that they kept their cool and they can write about it and talk about it freely is admiring. I admire them for that.
So how did you approach thinking about gun violence for your project?
I do a lot of talking about, like, politics and things like that with my mom and my dad and, like, people in my family. So I like to keep up with what's going on in the world. So when I found out it was about the homicide rates in Kansas City, I always thought this question that my mom asks, like, when she sees something on the news, somebody got shot. Like, why did they kill them? Like, why? What do you get out of killing someone? So that's what I based my poem off of.
Okay, I'm going to play a recording from the performance of you performing your piece for that final project. This is Logan Bates with Why Kill.
Why kill? You took his life and he's no longer your enemy. He's no longer your foe. But what did you gain? Respect from the hood? How does that help you? Body counts are really disrespectful. Think about what you really did. Because you killed that man, the world has one more fatherless black kid. You made a whole family cry with the movement of your index finger. But what did you gain? You have two more people, and at your head, they aim. His mother wants you locked up for life without parole. His brother wants to fill your body with 1,000 holes. The bullet doesn't end beef. It just starts more. Now you got a whole neighborhood looking, and you the one they looking for. Why kill? There's other ways to resolve issues. A lot of those that don't involve tissues. And long nights of mothers staying up and wondering why in the world they shoot my baby up. Why kill? Sandy Hook, Columbine, Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. Those are mass shootings that'll be heard about for ages. But why did they do it? A mental illness is what they say on the news. But there's fake news that tries to keep us confused. They never tell it like it really is, always trying to keep certain people innocent. Why do they want to keep us ignorant, stupid, and broke? That's why it's our job to stay woke.
Logan Bates, I can hear that argumentative writing experience in there. I hope that someday you can change someone's mind with some of this powerful stuff you're writing. I mean, how do you feel about your final piece?
I liked it, and I liked, like, if you were there to see it, I liked how I acted it out. I was basically, I was a guardian angel speaking over someone who had just killed someone, and I liked my final piece. I thought that this was something that would get people's attention and grab them and actually have them listen to me. I thought this was something that everybody could look at and be like, wow, he's right. Like, why are we killing each other? Because you always see people with shirts, and like when someone's just died due to gun violence or something like that, they have shirts with the people's names on them, like rest in peace, and pictures of them. And it's weird to me that like if someone killed somebody's friend, they have to go back and kill one of their friends. And that's weird to me. Like, you just lost someone and you know how that feels. And I know like you're angry and you want them to know how it feels. But if you know how it feels, why would you want to put that on anybody else? You know, that's sad. That's depressing. You know, when you lose someone that's close to you. And I know there's anger, but I don't think people have to go back and kill people. We're just hurting ourselves. It's not really doing anything. And,
LaShawna, what was it like for you to see Logan performing this piece?
I liked it. I liked how he expressed himself and how, like, he made his point clear. Like, his question clear. Why kill? And I just like the way he presented it.
Are the two of you, do you have plans to keep working on this stuff, to keep exploring this topic, to keep writing?
I have plans to write more.
I do like my English class. We did a science fiction narrative last semester. So I do like my English classes. I like doing the essays and things. I have thought about becoming a lawyer or something like that, but I'm not sure because there are other things I like to do. But, I'm not sure yet.
Charlotte, you know, KCUR came to your school as part of a project called The Argument, which is looking for sort of like deeper answers about how conflicts escalate into gun violence. Did the students' projects shed light on that for you?
Yes, they definitely shed light on the issue of gun violence in our community. They were able to do research. We had one group, as LaShawna said, she shared her statistics of 3,361 deaths. And so that was research. We had a variety of students being able to express the concerns of the project of The Argument. We had a play that they talked about different statistics and a short story. So I think they really got the message across. And I think they have had an impact, not only on themselves, but also those who were out watching. We had a lot of teachers that were really pleased of how the project ended. And I was definitely pleased that I even wrote a piece myself. Called Where Are the Brave Ones. We started off this project. The students started off this project really kind of shaky and nervous. They didn't really know what to expect because we didn't have this before in our building. But I told them that they were going to be able to, they had to express their pieces. And so once I saw that it was coming together, that's when I wrote my piece, Where Are the Brave Ones? Because I saw my students grow throughout the process of being nervous and scared to becoming brave and talking about a topic that is so prevalent in our community.
So the brave ones, the answer was your students?
They're part of the brave ones. We are the brave ones.
Charlotte Wafer, teacher from Central Academy of Excellence, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Logan, LaShana, thank you. Good luck with the rest of your school year. It was so great to meet you.
Thank you. It's good to meet you too.
I hope you keep writing.
We will. We will. We'll keep writing.
We will.
They joined us from Central Academy of Excellence. When we return, the growing presence of Dollar General stores in underserved communities. Are they filling a need or exploiting one? That's next. Stay tuned. You're listening to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now in rural America, local grocery stores and even big chains like Walmart have been shutting their doors, but Dollar General is opening lots of new locations in those very communities. An article in the Wall Street Journal shows how Dollar General is transforming rural America. Author Sarah Nassauer writes that Dollar General is expanding because rural America is struggling. I'm going to start out by talking to David Proctor about that. David Proctor is on the advisory board for something called the Rural Grocery Initiative at Kansas State University. Hi, David.
Good morning.
So first of all, what is the Rural Grocery Initiative? And we're going to get back to what that has to do with Dollar General.
Sure. In 2007, Kansas State University, along with a number of partners across the state, launched what we called the Rural Grocery Initiative. And we did that to try and understand the challenges that are being faced by rural grocery stores, to try and address those challenges, to try and identify sustainable models of operation for rural grocery stores. And also to provide an increase in access to healthy foods across the rural parts of the state.
So explain to me just from the ground up, like you're a person who lives in a rural community. We've heard a lot about depopulation and you're talking about access to groceries. What does that mean for people who are still living in these communities in terms of how to get their basic needs met?
Well, so the real folks that the challenges of the grocery store impact are folks with limited resources and also elderly. And what happens when grocery stores close or when they're not available there? Is that people are driving 20, 30, 40, 50 miles to obtain groceries. And if a grocery store doesn't exist, they turn to other places locally where there might be some limited food. And that could be a Dollar General store, that could be a convenience store, it could be a gas station. But what research has shown is that in all of those cases, that food is more highly processed. There is a limited choice or limited availability of fresh fruits and vegetables, of dairy, of bread. And so it really makes it a challenge to provide, to access, the basic needs of healthy food in rural parts of the state.
Okay, well, David Proctor, I'm going to get right back to you, but author Sarah Nassauer, who wrote that article in the Wall Street Journal, is on the line with us. And Sarah, you write that Dollar General is expanding because rural America is struggling. And furthermore, you also write that the more rural America struggles, the more Dollar General expects to succeed and do well in these areas. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. Dollar General has a model. You know, they're a company that started in 1955 in central Kentucky. So they started, you know, their sort of natural roots were, let's, you know, open rural locations. And for a long time, they've sort of opened up those sort of food deserts, those places where people have to drive 20 minutes for a grocery store. They put a Dollar General on that road, on that stretch of highway, before you get to the Walmart, before you get to the traditional grocer. And they've been doing that for years. And in recent years, you know, the economic trends in the United States, which have, you know, we've seen rural America get more than their fair share of, you know, health issues. There's been a bit of a flip between inner city issues and rural America issues in terms of maternal health, unemployment, et cetera. Those are their customers. And so their stores have done well in those areas and they're expanding in those places.
You know, in this city, I mean, you just mentioned the relationship between what goes on in the urban core and urban neighborhoods and what goes on in rural America. I mean, the connecting thing is poverty. And in urban neighborhoods that have been called food deserts for a long time, it's hard to get businesses to invest and set up shop there because they don't think they'll get the capital. But we had a guest on our show once who made the case that this was just totally wrong thinking because if people live in a place, people need to buy things, you know, like rich or poor, you're going to need toilet paper at some point, right? So Is Dollar General proving his point?
I don't know. I think, though, that what was so clear when I was reporting this story, and I spent a lot of time at some Dollar Generals in eastern Tennessee, was that these locations that are on these highways that sort of feel as an outsider like you're driving up to the middle of nowhere, but have been very strategically chosen by the company. In this case, the store that I spent a lot of time at is across from a post office that's in the town of Evansville, Tennessee, and it is 10 miles to the nearest Walmart. And, you know, there are people that are stopping there all day long that are saying, some people call it the Evansville Walmart. It is a convenience. It's a convenience play. And for them, that is the place that they can go most easily and get most of their needs met.
And so the idea, though, is that you get a smaller amount of thing. And so over time, you would be paying more for your basic necessities, or is that not
correct? Definitely. I mean, I think this is the whole dynamic. You know, I write about Costco as well. If we go to Costco and I can afford to buy up front, you know, hundreds of dollars of bulk goods, those things are actually less expensive on a per unit basis than if I'm going into Dollar General and buying a small box or a small bottle of laundry detergent that costs me less that day, but I'm getting less, right? And so I think, yeah, it's pretty clear that anyone shopping regularly at a dollar store versus a Costco or even a traditional grocer versus a Costco for a smaller amount of things is paying more per unit.
But for a lot of these customers, unless they have a long commute to the store, this would be the only option, right?
Yeah, the only option, or the only option if you don't want to pay for gas, right, to drive those 30 extra minutes, or you don't have the time because you have to pick up your kids somewhere. So yeah, I think it's very much the only option for people in a lot of cases.
So this is, I mean, I guess that's kind of an illustration of when people say things like it costs to be poor. This is exactly like if you don't have the money to put in the gas tank, you'll go and pay more for toothpaste.
Yeah. I think that is true in lots of ways, and is a wider issue for sure.
What inspired you to look into Dollar General?
I read about retailers. I read about Walmart and Costco and dollar stores and Home Depot. And Dollar General fascinated me because we're in this period right now where you're hearing probably of lots of retailers closing stores, lots of department stores. Even Walmart has sort of put its store count at a plateau where they don't want to open any more stores. They're going to invest in competing with Amazon. But Dollar General, about 2 years ago, they did this investor meeting where they were talking about, okay, we have 13,000 stores in America now. We're going to have 20,000 stores by 2020. And that really stands out at a time in retail when lots of folks are closing stores or not opening very many. And that just made me curious about what's going on here. Why do they feel they can do that? Why are investors happy when they hear that? And it kind of led to this very, I think, the core issue is this, their model works in rural America that is not seeing economic improvement, and that's why they're growing.
So it's a success story in rural America, but not necessarily a success story for rural America.
Exactly.
Well, Sarah Nassauer with me from The Wall Street Journal. Hang on. I want to see how this plays out in our local communities, okay?
Sounds good.
We're going to start by going with KCUR's Frank Morris to a small town in Kansas.
The last grocery store in Cocker City, Kansas, closed a few years ago, leaving folks here 6 miles from the nearest place to buy food. But things are looking up.
914, please.
Linda Clover says this new Dollar General offers sustenance, household goods, and companionship.
It's a place where you go and see your friends and people from other towns around. Everyone calls it the Cocker City Mall.
If you've never been to one, Dollar Generals are basically little discount stores stuffed with inexpensive items. It's the biggest of the so-called dollar store chains, and Chris Merritt, who heads the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs, says it's the one transforming the rural landscape.
For many communities, it's the first new commercial investment in many years, and it represents progress of a sort.
Dollar General is set to open 1,000 stores this year, pushing its total past 14,000, more outlets than McDonald's has in the U.S. That includes plenty of urban locations, but the chain's bright yellow and black signs were sprouted every 10 miles or so along some remote state highways. Dollar General got its start in small-town Kentucky, so like Walmart, it's got rural DNA. And Al Cross, who runs the Institute for Rural Journalism at the University of Kentucky, says Dollar General competes with the world's largest retailer on price and convenience.
They serve a big part of the country that Walmart doesn't serve directly. You have to maybe drive 20 miles to get to a Walmart. You might only have to drive 5 miles to get to a Dollar General.
Dollar General refused to comment for this story, but retail analyst Mike Paglia says the chain succeeds by selling everyday items at recession-era prices.
In a lot of rural areas, times are still very, very difficult, and a lot of shoppers are still struggling to get by.
Even before the recession, it was tough to run a store in rural America.
Half the grocery stores in Iowa closed between the years of 1995 to 2005. Half of the grocery stores in the state closed.
Kent Baker publishes the weekly paper in tiny Mauville, Iowa. His front windows look across Main Street at a block of empty buildings. But when Mauville lost its grocery store, townspeople fought back, donating $600,000 worth of cash and property to build a new one.
535.
Chet Davis manages Chet's Foods.
We were doing real well. We were making a profit, and we were keeping our customers satisfied, and then in come Dollar General.
Right next to the grocery store, Davis saw his sales plunge. He may have to close, though the store does have devoted customers like Brian Paulson. He's buying frozen pizzas and likely paying more than he would next door because he wants to support this store.
So use it or lose it. It's like all the rest of small towns. They never use theirs, and theirs are gone. And I'd rather come here than Dollar General.
But even Kent Baker, who helped save the grocery store here, admits that Dollar General offers items that people haven't been able to buy in this town for decades. And ultimately, it's consumers who will decide whether all that Dollar General brings to rural America is worth what it likely takes away.
Thanks to Frank Morris for that story. Call 816-235-2888 to tell us how you see Dollar General or another discount store transforming your community. 816-235-2888. If you go to the dollar store, we want to know what it means to you, what it has meant to you, how it affects you. And same with a local grocer in your community. You know, David Proctor, I want to get back to this question of that relationship between Dollar General and the local grocery, because by extension, that's the local economy, right?
Exactly. So the store owner that was interviewed in the piece certainly represents one powerful point of view, which is that they are Dollar Generals are very tough competitors. We have done research that indicates that Dollar Generals oftentimes take somewhere between 10% and 30% of the sales that that were going into the grocery store. But there's another point of view, and it's related to the conversation we've been having, and that is that Dollar General stores, some owners believe, actually keep people in the local community shopping instead of driving to a larger city to buy those everyday items that they're looking for, and while in that bigger city, you know, do all of their grocery shopping. And so some owners see the Dollar General as somewhat of a benefit because it keeps folks in town where they, you know, they buy dry goods or whatever at the Dollar General, but then they still shop at the grocery store there in the local rural community.
The idea behind all of this is that rural America has seemingly not bounced back from the recession. Can you talk to me more about that?
Well, I mean, certainly there is, in rural Kansas anyway, there is this slow depopulation that's going on. And as the number of folks living there move out, there is significant levels of poverty in rural pockets around the state of Kansas. I mean, that makes it tough for businesses to succeed. And I think you're absolutely right that there, you know, in many, many rural communities across Kansas, the economic times are tough.
Sarah Nassauer, I mean, how does this look different, this relationship between poverty and the dollar store? How does that look different in communities in a city versus rural areas?
I think it's actually very similar. I think it's just about which companies or which retailers feel that they can operate in those places. It's exactly the same in many ways. There are businesses, and there have been for a long time, that, you know, feel that their niche is selling to low-income folks, and there's always been debate over what is actually sold in those places, how does that affect eating behavior, et cetera. I think the difference here is that Dollar General in particular is doing something that isn't being done by a lot of people, if any other companies, right?
And which is?
Which is going into a place that has 1,000 people. They've started to open these smaller format stores that are about the size of a basketball court. They say can be profitable in a place that has less than 1,000 households around it. So whereas in a city, I live in Brooklyn, there's a dollar store on my corner. They have a lot of competition. There's lots of other retailers. There might be a convenience store at least.
There are also lots of customers.
And there are lots of customers. It's a more competitive environment, which is one reason why Dollar General actually hasn't succeeded in those places, is because it's a whole different competitive landscape in an urban low-income environment.
Well, I'm Gina Kaufman. We're headed to a break. Call 816-235-2888 to tell us how you see Dollar General or another dollar store transforming your community. You're listening to Central Standard. We will be right back. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is KCUR Central Standard. We're talking about how Dollar General and other dollar stores are transforming their communities that they move into. Dollar General, in particular, appears to be transforming rural America, and fast. My guests are Sarah Nassauer of The Wall Street Journal and David Proctor of the Rural Grocery Initiative. Hi again, Sarah.
Hi.
And hello, David.
Hello.
I have so many more questions for you, but I want to get to our callers. We've got Libby on the line from Overland Park. Hi, Libby.
Hi, Gina. I was listening to this, to the program, and my husband and I recently drove 6,000 miles in a loop from Overland Park to the Oregon coast and back again, mostly through the western states. And we were very impressed by the huge expanses of open land as we drove along. So I'm kind of wondering if Dollar General is penetrating that market as well. Those people may not necessarily be living in poverty, but they drive tremendous distances to get to grocery stores and things like that. So I'll let you discuss it. I'll hang up now.
Thanks. Thanks for the call, Libby. So, I mean, I guess I'll start with you, David. I mean, what do you know about, as you look to the West and you look at large expanses of land that don't even necessarily have a town uniting them, kind of. What do you see there?
I mean, I think that, you know, what we've been saying is pointing to the fact that Dollar General is expanding in all rural areas. I think that they, you know, I think that they are building close to communities. As we've pointed out, they build, you know, on highways, they build on sort of high traffic areas, but they are building near rural communities. So, you know, as the caller, you know, as she indicated, as they were driving through the Northwest, I'm sure that while the Dollar Generals may not be out in the middle of nowhere, that they are building, they are expanding close to rural communities all along the route that she and her husband took.
You know, I'm curious, as you know, as we talk about this, didn't Walmart do try something similar to what Dollar General is doing right now with their neighborhood markets, I believe they were called a few years back?
That's exactly right. They in Kansas, they built, I think that they built, I think they built eight neighborhood markets in very rural communities. That experiment lasted for about 2 years, and they just shut all of those buildings. And it was really fairly devastating because there were some communities where those Walmart stores, those small Walmart stores, were open just long enough to put local groceries out of business. But interestingly, Dollar General has actually bought some of those buildings and opened into those facilities.
But is that kind of the danger then? I mean, I'll turn to Sarah on this. You know, when you have a community where someone from the outside comes in and opens something up, if it doesn't work, there's no kind of personal investment that keeps you trying. You know what I mean? Like the local grocers who are trying to hang on right now.
Yeah, no, there's no, you know, no, it's not run, it's not a business that's owned by a local for sure. Those Walmart stores, they were Walmart Express stores, and they were opened at the time, you know, in the post-recession era by Walmart when dollar stores were doing really, really well and taking some of Walmart's business. And yes, they have since culled some of them, ironically, to Dollar General, being sold to Dollar General. I think, yeah, there's a, you know, once a store opens, especially a company that has the size and the buying power that creates lower prices like a Walmart or a Dollar General, that's going to, you know, there's going to be a big competitive rush to those stores. That frozen pizza that was in the piece that one of someone was talking about is always going to be cheaper at the Dollar General or the Walmart than the mom and pop place. And so, yeah, what happens in the wake of closures, especially as more retail closures might be on the horizon for some communities, I think is an important question.
Let's talk to Jeff in Osawatomie. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, this is Jeff in Osawatomie. Very ironic call as I'm just walking out of Dollar General in Osawatomie where we have just lost our grocery store. At Dollar General, I bought my peanut butter, milk, crackers, and soup. I am fortunate to be able to go up to Kansas City for other reasons once a week and load up on fruits and vegetables, but lots of my people in my community don't have that opportunity.
You know,
one,
Jeff.
One thing I'd.
Oh, go on.
One comment I want to make. I work throughout rural Kansas in healthcare, so I'm throughout the whole state, and I see the economy definitely struggling from the economic recovery. The small towns really exist with education and healthcare as the common thread, and both of those sectors have really suffered or not been able to bounce back in Kansas. So I agree that rural healthcare, pardon me, rural economy is still struggling in Kansas.
Did the grocery store close first or the Dollar General move in?
Dollar General has been here for many years, but it just recently expanded. The grocery store changed hands and the new owner was not able to service his debt. And so after being in business just 6 months, the new grocery store owner had to close.
So for you, I mean, are you able to get the kind of food at Dollar General that you could get at that grocery store? Is it about the same or has that changed people's eating habits?
It has definitely changed people's eating habits. In our family, we're big in fruits and vegetables. And so we have the luxury of being in the Kansas City area or as I'm traveling across Kansas can stop at bigger grocery stores, you know, weekly and just stock up. But definitely it's hurting people's diets in terms of prepared foods and, you know, just not having the fresh fruits, vegetables, fresh meats available.
Well, Jeff, thank you for calling in and letting us know what's going on there in Osawatomie.
Thanks for a timely subject. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's hear now from Jean. Jean is calling us from Belton. Hi, Jean.
Hey, Gina, how are you?
Good. How about you?
Really good. Thanks for approaching this topic. This is really important. Jeff just mentioned a couple words that really stand out to me that we need to be thinking about. And one is being fortunate or luxury, and also community. So I live in Belton, and we have a Dollar General. It's busy all day. We also have two lucrative grocery stores. So they're not really competing with the grocery store here. More the question is where they're located. They're located on the west side of town where there is no public transportation or anything out this way. And we have homeless camps here in Belton. Nobody likes to talk about it, but they're here. And the Dollar General just so happens to be very close to the homeless camp. So I can see both sides of this. I can see, as a business owner myself, I can see trying to find a niche and coming up with product and, you know, making a business. And then I can also say that, you know, they're providing jobs. There's a chance that we're going to get another Dollar General here in Belton, again, on the west side of the city. That's just smart business. They've got lots of jobs on the board. So on that side, that's not bad. What I don't like is how they prey on lower income or less fortunate people in our community. And I think that, I don't see, we have some meal programs out here. We don't have emergency food like they do down in the city, and rural areas also in the same boat as that. But I think that at some point, community is going to have to, help meet some of these people's needs as well. Like Jeff said, fresh fruits and vegetables, they're important. And if people aren't getting that kind of food, then community needs to also get in there and pitch in a hand.
Thanks, Jean. Yeah. You know, David, what about things like social services stepping in to fill some needs? How does that fit into the picture in Kansas anyway?
Well, I mean, you know, the work that we do is in rural communities, and the social safety net, the social services are, you know, they're not always very strong in those rural communities, or they're not very present. One of the things that I appreciate about the last two callers is this idea of community. And one of the things, we got started with the Rural Grocery Initiative really to, we talked a lot about sustainability of rural communities and viability of rural communities. And certainly Dollar General helps a little bit in that way. But the rural grocery stores are really, they are anchor businesses. They are anchor institutions that provide many more jobs than Dollar General. They are much more committed to community initiatives. Someone mentions meeting spaces in Dollar General. Certainly there's a lot of meeting spaces that go on in rural grocery stores. And so we believe that those rural businesses, independently owned businesses, are just tremendously important.
Well, I want to turn to Sarah Nassauer for one last question. I mean, Sarah, you've been studying this nationally. As you hear these local stories, how does that contribute to the picture you have right now of what's going on in America?
I think it really echoes it. These are great examples of exactly what's happening in communities and what people are thinking about. And I think, though, if you look at Dollar General's growth, that is evidence of what is happening in rural America. That is evidence of the economic situation that many small towns and crossroads, you know, not even necessarily town, find themselves in.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And David Proctor speaking with us from K-State and the Rural Grocery Initiative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah's article in the Wall Street Journal is called How Dollar General Became Rural America's Store of Choice. You can listen back to this whole conversation at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Tom Taylor. I'm Gina Kaufman.